Welcome to the WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development and Durham Technical Community College. Our monthly forum features Chapel Borough's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. The discussion is sponsored by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to business and for business. More at opentobusiness.biz and by Durham Technical Community College, Durham and Orange County campuses. Do great things. The WCHL Community Forum begins now.
Welcome into the WCHL Community Forum. We are taking a little bit of a different format this year, so we'll take just a second and update you on that. In years past, we have had a bit of a marathon broadcast day bringing the Community Forum to our listeners here throughout Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County, and we have got a big ask of listeners in those years asking to stay tuned with us for 10 straight hours of live broadcast, and we thought we would change that up a little bit moving forward. We're going to have one of these hour-long forums each month that will provide us a little more flexibility, and will also make it a little more timely in terms of what we're able to talk about. And there's not been probably a bigger issue in our community, maybe House Bill 2 and the transition to House Bill 142 rivaling it. But the Trump White House, we're right around 100 days of Donald Trump being president of the United States, and we have seen a lot of issues around our community, and we have collected a group here today to try to bring you the best perspective that we can on how some of those federal changes are impacting us locally here. So we'll start here with Chapel Hill Police Chief Chris Blue.
Well, I think what comes to mind immediately to me is the ramped up rhetoric around immigration enforcement since the election and since the inauguration, well, really leading up to the election and becoming even more elevated since the inauguration and the resulting travel bans. People are afraid, and I've been really proud of the efforts Orange County has made to build relationships across all communities the last few years, and I'm so concerned that those efforts are being undermined by loaded language coming out of really both the federal and state governments. I'm concerned about the relationship and trust building being harmed by that rhetoric.
And Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Blake. I agree with everything Chief Blue said. I guess I'll speak also as a local elected leader. I think that the rhetoric and the angst and the just distrust now of government in general and elected officials in general has filtered practically everywhere. You know, not just the topic of this discussion will be the Trump White House, but we've seen it for years now at the state level. And the local level is what where the rubber hits the road. But we are hearing from our citizens a plea really for more accountability and transparency and ethical governing than ever before. Mm-hmm. And I know as we get into some of the topics of the day, we'll see how those play out more fully.
And we're moving around the table here. Eric Valera is able to join us from El Centro.
Certainly. Thank you, Blake. El Centro Hispano is located – we have an office located in Durham and also in Carrboro. Been around for about 25 years in different locations. And over the years, we've been responding to different needs. In some cases, those needs have been education. We provide services to help those who are eligible to become citizens go through the process of becoming a citizen. We have programs for children, for parents, for workers. And this year has been a pivotal year. In the last year, we have seen a lot more fear, as Chief Blue was just saying, a lot more people coming to us with reports of fear, things that are going on in the schools anecdotally. And in a lot of this, and a lot of information and misinformation. It's really important for us to get our community engaged at every level. And it becomes very difficult to get people engaged when the rhetoric is telling them to stay away and to be fearful. So what we want our community to be visible. We want our community to be engaged. And we want our vision is to have Latinos contribute to a stronger North Carolina.
rounding out our panel today is Sajal Nasrallah, basically based in Durham, but doing a lot of community organizing all across the Triangle, an artist.
Yeah, as was said, my name is Sajal Nasrallah. Here today representing myself in terms of a lot of different community organizing that I've been plugged into in the Durham and Triangle area, most particularly around the refugee community organizing work, which has been an initiative that's been propelled by a number of different agencies and foundations, but has been supported locally by Church World Service, as well as connecting to a more autonomous refugee-led organizing effort that I am part of, which is called NC United for Refugees and Immigrants. And so the core of our work has typically been around engaging refugee leaders with trainings, political education, trainings and understanding around the electoral process, pathways to citizenship, the benefits of that, and how to protect those benefits that within a democracy like the one that we live in, or within a society like the one that we live in, engaged political action is the most significant means not only to secure our communities, but also to shift power in our favor and to continue to preserve those benefits and expand them for ourselves. So that has been the base of the work. And as I think has been echoed around the room, the fear of belonging and the distrust and the uncertainty has been a challenge. So as of more recently, we could say that building and community organizing with refugees, as I have seen it, has been a process of collectively overcoming fear.
And I think everybody there may have mentioned education at some point in that process of educating, whether it be of pathways to that are available within our community specifically, or just generally giving a little bit of guidance along the way. Eric, I want to bring you back into this. How have y'all tried to maybe cross-organize or get in touch with, whether it be Carrboro leadership or Chapel Hill Police, to enhance that education?
Absolutely. Both the town of Carrboro and Chapel Hill have been very supportive to the work that's being done at El Centro Hispano. The Chapel Hill Police Department, as well as the Carrboro Police Department and Orange County, and even Hillsborough, has been very supportive in our Faith Action ID program, mm-hmm. Which is a program that we are networked with other organizations around the state to be able to provide organizational IDs where we vet the IDs verifying who they are and where they live. And this has been a very important program for us, and not just in the fact that that people are getting IDs, but in the fact that in order to be able to receive one of these IDs, we go through a training, and these trainings are kind of model a town hall meeting where they learn what this ID is and what it is not. It's not a driver's license. It is not a government ID. Mm-hmm. It's an ID that is provided for you by an organization, and that we have and where we've had law enforcement and other officials come and speak in front of the group and be able to have this dialogue back and forth it's been wonderful. I mean, we see a lot of people walk in there with a lot of fear and walk out taking selfies with the officers. And that really changes people. That really changes minds. I mean, when Chief Blue says, if you need something, reach out to me, they're like, I have access now. And that's something that they wouldn't have thought that they had had before. So we provide information there. I think we provide a lot of trust building there. There's a lot more to do. And we're really working to make sure that people are well informed. Like I said, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And as we know, when we play the game of telephone, facts start to change over time. And so we want to make sure that people are aware of what their rights are. We want to know that people know how to protect themselves, but they also feel safe enough to be able to report a crime or to go to the doctor when they need to.
And I think that's an interesting point from rumors of whether it be a checkpoint on 15501 between Chapel Hill and Durham or whatever the case may be. And Chief Blue, y'all got on that very quickly to say, well, y'all, we Chapel Hill police were not participating in, carrying out, or aware that any type of checkpoint was going on. But it certainly did spark a lot of that fear. And I want you to see if, talk about that a little bit. And also I wanted to ask you about the faith IDs that were mentioned, what they can do for the law enforcement side of this and from the community perspective.
Well, first off, when those rumors started going around 6 weeks ago or something like that, where there was concern about ICE-related checkpoints happening out on 15501, my phone started ringing, which actually I'm encouraged by that. That means people are willing to call and ask questions. But we were really concerned because, number one, we knew that not to be true. Number two, we were concerned that our community would believe we would have any knowledge of that. And number three, we were really concerned that a rumor that caught fire on social media might undo all the good work that Eric talked about, that we've been working so hard on, and that we still have a lot to do going forward. So we did, along with collaboration with our other area law enforcement partners, all try to get ahead of that and get some messaging out. And just to show you the power of social media, I think within 24 hours that message had been retweeted 24,000 times or some insane metric. So it reminds you the power of that tool, and particularly when people are keyed in on an issue and really seeking information. You were asking about Faith ID. Well, I will tell you, as you were hearing about the history of the program, I was thinking the most important part of the Faith ID coming to our community and allowing us to participate really was not that we see these cards very often. In fact, I don't know that we've seen more than one or two of them out in the community since we began issuing them, and we've probably issued over 1,000.
Over 2,000 now.
That's amazing. So we're not seeing the cards very often. We know they're there. Don't have to see them. But the very fact of sitting down for 2.5 or 3 hours on a Saturday morning with a group of folks, many of whom are distrustful of law enforcement and government in general, and during the course of that few hours, you told my selfie story. I mean, it is absolutely true that we've got folks taking pictures with police officers and feeling I'll just say after each Faith ID event, I ask people to email me and call me if they have questions. They do. And they do that with all the other law enforcement folks who are in the room. I take that as a sign of success. So to me, the Faith ID has not necessarily been something that I've seen applied in lots of practical settings out in the community. Again, I'm sure it has been, but I haven't seen it very much. But to me, the very act of talking about it, talking about what we stand for in our community and what we believe law enforcement's role is with respect to immigration issues, that's invaluable. And Faith ID has given us a forum to do that. I do want to come back just real quick to the rumors about the federal ICE raids in our community and the ensuing fear. I also believe that we had 3 or 4 opportunities to meet with community members, groups that had assembled on the heels of that rumor circulating. I don't believe that 2 years ago we would have been able to get those groups together like that, nor that we would have been invited to the meeting if the groups had assembled. And I think that's a very positive thing. I was glad to have an opportunity, along with my other area law enforcement colleagues, to get in front of several different rooms and reassure folks that our position hasn't changed.
We have got to take a quick break. Mayor Lavelle wanting to jump in here, and was wanting to shift the conversation toward you here as soon as we get back on the WCHL Community Forum, talking the Trump White House and the impact of those federal changes on us here locally, here on WCHL.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a 4-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum as we are talking the Trump White House changing federal policy and the impact that can have on us here locally. And Mayor LaBelle, you were eager to jump in there before we were having to take a break. So we were talking about faith ID programs and we're getting into sanctuary cities a little bit and some of the targeting that is seen from the state and the federal level.
Right. I just wanted to say, well, I'm looking at my Faith Action ID. and so many of us that are elected officials have gone out in support of this initiative. And I actually use it every chance I get. Chief, if I ever get stopped, that's the one I'm going to pull out. So, but you know, because I feel like that's important too, to embrace it. And whenever I speak to folks at El Centro, I was there last week for a meeting, I always pull it out and just, you know, kind of in solidarity. It was important to keep it in legislation that the legislature passed last year, where at first they took it out and then they put it back in, and then we had to fight to keep it back in and to go over there and speak out about it. I know it seems to come up every session or so that they wanted to get rid of that, and they make other proposals of other types of identification. But I would just also like to chime in that I know in terms of us, our police department, our chief, Walter Horton, who is often on the stump with Chief Blue, also really greatly appreciates the program and finds it, you know, contributes obviously to the safety of the community and for people's willingness to come forward.
And the sanctuary city title has been thrown around a lot over the last couple of years. As you were mentioning, the Faith ID portion, all of that has been in the greater conversation of sanctuary cities. A law last year, I believe it was, signed into law banning sanctuary cities, and now coming back during the ongoing legislative session and trying to withhold funding from quote unquote sanctuary cities. Whereas, you know, the immediate reaction is, well, you banned them last year, so what you know, tools are you using to determine that? What do you get from the General Assembly whenever you try to have those conversations?
Well, you know, for one, we really don't have the conversation. I'm not sure that they really understand what we're talking about at the local level. It's every time we get asked, why are you a sanctuary city? You know, first we say there's no membership club you sign up for and pay your deposit to be a sanctuary city. You know, but if that means that we're welcoming of our entire community, of all of our immigrants, you know, of everyone who lives there, documented or undocumented, if we want them all to be safe, if we all want them to all be contributing members of the community, then I suppose, you know, you could throw us in that category. At the same time, and Chief can expand on this a little more, you know, we don't violate any state or federal immigration laws. Mm-hmm. And we, as our chief would say, we're not in the business of enforcing immigration. We're in the business of keeping our citizens safe.
Sidrell, I want to bring you into this as well, because we've been talking about a lot of immigration topics, but you can walk around Chapel Hill, Carver, mm-hmm. and see signs in a lot of restaurants supporting refugees as well and saying this is an open, welcoming environment. These people came here as refugees. There's no type of conversation over the legality of some of these situations as there is in the other case. So what goes through your mind on those kind of polar parts of that?
Sure. I think – so one of the questions here is the tension between refugee and immigration. You know, like what is refugee resettlement? Who comes in? What's their status? How do they get here? Are they a threat? Are they criminalized in the same way? And how we perceive undocumented immigration or migrants in this country. So it's a very complex conversation, and I will say a lot of things on it, but I will try to keep it simple. So One, you know, I mean, I think we have to see that there's multiple definitions of what a refugee is. In one sense, refugee resettlement is the program that has been widely enjoyed, has widely enjoyed bipartisan support, has been around, has a missionary and faith-based history, has led in the globe Western nations in terms of resettling people who have fled their homes due to persecution or fear of violence or war to come to the United States and other parts of Europe and North America. That is a refugee resettlement process. That is a refugee settlement institution. However, the refugee experience is quite quite distinct and much broader than that. We have to understand that who actually can identify with the refugee experience is much greater than the UN has ever attempted to capture. People can be internally displaced. People can be displaced from their homes. People can be displaced from their nation. People can choose to migrate due to more reasons than just fear of persecution or war, but for economic reasons or from other forms of emotional abuse or violence. And that is something that we're really trying to really push with our welcoming initiatives, that we what we have seen is that refugees have a kind of activate a different sort of sentiment with larger groups of people and popular efforts that are wanting to take like meaningful action right now. For example, you know, refugee resettlement, again, you know, incredible support for it, but refugees themselves not. And we're really trying to say, and this is how we engage our leadership as well, is that many of the folks that I work with have had to flee their home in order to move to a neighboring country. And in that neighboring country have had restricted movement, have had policing that was unfair to them, have had a set of laws almost as similar to kind of an apartheid system they've existed within. And through that have, if given resettlement, have come to this country and been given status and a pathway to citizenship. Many of the folks who are migrants in this country now are experiencing similar sorts of fears and similar sorts of persecution. Let's say, if we can just call it that, with the way that the federal government is not only labeling and identifying folks who are humans and mass deporting them is not a Trump thing. This is an America thing. So we are aligning our leadership, who are refugees with status, with that experience, because it is a very – it's a globalized experience. This is a far larger movement. This is a far larger experience. And so we are trying to really align the identity of refugee with migrancy as a whole and not just with the status that is granted permission to come and build a new life in the United States.
Eric, it looks like you were wanting to weigh in there.
I think that's absolutely right. There are different types of statuses in which people come from other countries and they come here, some as refugees, some as immigrants. Some have work permits. Some have residencies, which provide them almost as much rights as citizens, but they can't vote or serve on a jury. And often we see this binary that they're either from here or they're not from here. Mm-hmm. And we want in the rhetoric that we want people who are not from here to go back from wherever they came from. And that's very dangerous and that's very dehumanizing. The idea of some immigrants also feeling like refugees also is whether you could go back to where you're from. Just because we have good relationship with another country does not mean that person is safe in their home country. And I'll give you the example, when we start seeing laws that are against our LGBTQ community, and you're at the intersection of LGBTQ and immigration, you are really in a vulnerable position. And that's really where we're seeing a lot of vulnerability, where I'm hearing people in our community going, well, why do they hate me? Because they're making laws against immigration and they're making laws against LGBTQ. And so if I was to go back to my home country, I could really be in danger there. Mm-hmm. But we have a good relationship with that country. And so then that person wouldn't necessarily go through a refugee resettlement program, but they are in exile.
Mary Lavelle.
Thanks for bringing that up, Eric. Last week, several of us spoke to a group at El Centro in Durham of LGBT folks who attend the center. And the mass confusion or questions or concerns they had, not just around immigration issues, but also just around the HB2-ish, you know, can I even go out in public and feel safe, and can I get married or not? So there's kind of also double confusion around the laws and the protections under those laws.
We're talking about federal policy changes, and one of the biggest recently has been rescinding guidance, the Obama administration guidance regarding the definition of sex when we're talking about bathroom usage. Whenever you're considering all of those things coming from the federal level, while you know that fight is still going on at the state level with this HB2 deal that was struck between Republican legislative leadership and the Democratic Governor Roy Cooper, who ran a campaign with fully repealing House Bill 2 as a centerpiece.
Yeah, so there's no question that the new Trump administration has really set back any kind of movement that we were going to see going forward for LGBT rights, but also specifically transgender rights, as mm-hmm. you're saying. And so even before the HB2, HB 142 compromise, you know, we knew the day after Trump was elected that guidance would change with regard to guidelines that the Attorney General had set out around how bathroom usage in public buildings and through Title IX and all of that should be construed and so forth. And so that's also kind of filtering out and down to the lawsuits. I know our lawsuit in North Carolina that was partially challenging it was challenging HB2, but the first part of HB2, which dealt with public facilities, so that claim is being dropped. And of course, the United States has dropped their suit since their position has changed. You know, in many ways, having the first part, Section 1 of HB2, gone is wonderful. I mean, it really, really is. And I've said this several times since the compromise that we're not going to hear from the kids and the college students and the adults who kind of several times a day would have to look over their shoulder or think about going to the bathroom and people looking at them, you know, just because of that really silly bill, you know, that was told you had to use the restroom associated with your biological sex. So to have that part of the bill gone and just have it return to, you know, what it was before, which was essentially people just use the restroom they feel comfortable with. That's the way it is in 49 of 50 states. You know, there's no guidance either way. So people just let people go to the bathroom. You know, to have that gone, I think, is a plus. However, there still is, and this is just – and this has really kind of been an emerging area of the law over the last 10 to 15 years in public facilities, how to appropriately address students that are truly transgender and to treat them, you know, equally and fairly, and to figure out how you do that within the bounds of, you know, a system that was not used to having to think about this, you know, in terms of buildings or financing or just acceptance and people understanding what's going on. So it's as we see these cases kind of move forward, they won't be relying on the guidance of the executive branch, which they did before under the Attorney General, but they'll be going forward on some type of equal protection type arguments, I hope our judiciary is ready for that, and I hope our judiciary stays relatively stable whenever cases like that make their way up to the United States Supreme Court.
We do have more to get to. We've done a lot of laying out what issues there have been. So what do we do going forward? What do we do from here? That's what we'll tackle whenever we come back here on the WCHL Community Forum, talking about the Trump White House, federal decisions, and the impacts those are having on us locally.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year.
Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a four-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Well, welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum. This edition of the forum, tackling the Trump White House and changing federal policy, the impact that can have on us locally. And one of the things that Donald Trump did campaign on and then has tried to execute a couple of times is a relatively large kind of blanket ban on immigration from predominantly Muslim countries. Islam as a whole, we have Donald Trump repeating radical Islamic terrorism over and over and over again. And then you've got, you can look right here, Chief Blue, with the Chapel Hill shooting a couple of years ago. I mean, everybody has got a perspective on that. And there's some that certainly feel that that was because they were Muslim students. So from a local policing perspective, How do you keep everyone safe while you have this kind of fear of others that Sajal was talking about?
Well, I think we talked a lot about refugee and immigrant related rhetoric, and I think the rhetoric around Islamophobia has been just as intense and just as troubling. As I speak to my Muslim friends in this community, they are afraid, they are concerned. That sense of other that you describe, I think it's more palpable now than it has ever been. And this creating this division and sense of you're different and not afforded the same inclusivity in our community is pretty disturbing. You mentioned the shootings of a couple years ago, and one of the things we've been trying to think about since then is just ways to continue to demystify Islam. And there's a group of community members that have been meeting ever since then, folks from the university, folks from the Muslim Student Association, some local government folks, to talk about how we can continue to build those connections and make our Muslim friends feel more comfortable in our community. I am looking forward to our first mosque opening, hopefully sometime real soon. Chapel Hill Islamic Society has been finishing up work on their new facility, and I won't steal their thunder. They'll get to talk about their grand opening soon, and I look forward to supporting that. But I think that everything we've talked about today can be applied to this discussion around Islamophobia, this sense of creating fear and sense of other and driving a wedge there in the interest of some agenda. And it's really disturbing and it's concerning and it's also sad, particularly when we had a tragedy in our community, and I've seen that leveraged actually to create even more division.
What does it do, Sajal, to have universities that are major drivers of a lot of different things in UNC and Duke that are on the forefront of that conversation as well?
Appreciate the conversation on this. This is a highly emotional topic.
Yeah.
Just so that's clear, as a Muslim and having been at UNC at the time as a graduate student when the shootings happened, and seeing the way that leadership was acting, not only leadership from Chancellor Folt, but also in the larger Islamic community who are rooted in the universities, Duke and UNC, not actually calling this act a hate crime and resisting that was a challenge for me as a person, and knowing that being 29 years old, I have not lived in North Carolina without Islamophobia in my experience. So to see the way that universities are acting, I think that there are some bold moves that can be made. I think that additional support for the MSA, additional support for this Islamic community, these things will bring visibility and comfort and reassurance to a lot of folks. But one of the major asks that we do in our community organizing work when we're doing outreach for other advocates and communities, whether it's they're in the university systems or they're in elected positions or otherwise faith-based leaders, is that we really want to, like, this popular word has been coming around now called resist, you know, and it's been tossed around a lot. And we want to kind of like really help people articulate what that means for them within their particular institutions. And for university leaders to continue to make just Band-Aid statements on very difficult and emotionally riveting issues and not be bold enough to say what actually we face, not we know that we face as a society and as a people, is further distracting of our own humanity in this circumstance. And so right now we know that UNC has become the largest recipient of the CVE, the Countering Violent Extremism Program, which has been rumored to potentially be changed to the Countering Islamic Extremism Program under President Trump. And so it's a sum of about $850,000. And it would be based on a community-based program that is trying to is building a community-based program to create PSAs to share with Muslim communities anti-radicalization information based on this myth that we know that Muslims in this country have been portrayed as a Trojan horse, as a insular, self-radicalizing society. If we don't intervene or hold them accountable to other great acts of terrorism that exist in the world, then they can't be trusted. The see something, say something kind of narrative, and to counter that. And UNC is pursuing a program. Not only are they pursuing that program, they're doing it, and they're going to employ over 30 undergraduate students to be part of this project. And this, I mean, it's just terrible leadership. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if we were actually going to really take to heart what Chief Blue was just mentioning about the kind of fear and the kind of insecurity that we're facing, the other sort of issues, and the fact that we know that the fear about refugees and who they were coming to this country happened after the Charlie Hebdo shootings and that sort of crisis, you know, and that sort of fear. And we know that there's not a single act, not a single proven act that any refugee who's come to this country has promoted or pursued an act of terrorism. You know, I mean, it's a highly emotional issue, and we just need to be clear on the facts, and we need our leaders to be clear on the facts as well.
And I want to bring Eric from El Centro into this as well. I mean, El Centro is, I think you said 25 years of that groundwork that y'all have been putting in on having these conversations and getting the seats at the much more powerful tables than this, of course, but to try to further those conversations. But what does it still do to be able to go back and have these conversations with that group of immigrants and just say, you know, I'm scared of X right now, and be able to relay that to those people you built relationships with?
Well, I think one of the things that CGL and I have in common here is that we're representing community, right? And in that, I see that what community, and especially those who are marginalized, they want to be seen and they want to be heard. I think it's more important to listen and support artists and support self-expression and provide forums like this and more so for people to be able to express their narrative. And sometimes that's going to be they're going to express discomfort. But dialogue is important. It's when we try to silence that dialogue and when we start talking at people that it becomes quite dangerous. That's when it feels like suppression, and that's when more marginalization exists, and it becomes dangerous for everybody. So I think we want to be seen, we want to be heard, and I echo what you say, Sajjad. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak in this way, and I hope that forums like this continue to exist throughout our community.
Well, one way to be seen and heard and kind of it expressed across our community a lot of values was the Day Without Immigrants that we had earlier in the year, and I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit as well in terms of businesses, for one, showing solidarity whenever they did in saying, you know, we asked and our staff that's 75%, 90% immigrant said we would like to be able to observe this today. What does it do from that business perspective? Because ultimately, a lot of people are coming here because it is an area that they see as an welcoming, for one, probably, but also opportunistic, and being able to come here and make a life for themselves.
You know, that's one way of putting it, right? To make a life for themselves, but it's also making a life for our community. Mm. It's the contribution. It's not just what people are getting from it. It's the contribution that people are making to the community, to starting new businesses, to starting small businesses, developing vocations, to being able to fill in where in jobs and to be able to help expand. I mean, there's a lot of myth out there that people who come from other countries are not paying taxes, which is not true at all. Paying income taxes, paying sales taxes, and contributing in many ways, and that's just one way. Much less in terms of entrepreneurship and meeting needs that weren't met before in unique ways. So it's really, I think I want to kind of flip that script and make it about what is being contributed than what is being taken, because that's really where it's at.
There's so much more that we feel like we need to, we could talk about. Well, we do need to start heading toward wrapping this up, and we will do that whenever we come back here on the WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a four-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum. We are talking about the Trump White House and the changing federal policies and the impact that they're having locally in our community. And of course, we're talking about from a policy perspective and just from a life perspective. And we've been joined throughout the hour by a lot of different perspectives. Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle, Chapel Hill Police Chief Chris Blue. We've also got Eric Valera from El Centro Español and Sajal Nasrallah, who is a community organizer, artist, and works with refugees on a daily basis. So going forward, what do we need to be keeping in mind? What do we need to do from a community perspective to reinforce these community values, Mayor Lavelle?
Yeah, I was thinking through during the conversation of ways in Carrboro we have tried to embrace our immigrant community, our refugees. But we, of course, have El Centro's located in Carrboro, where we fund a part-time worker. We have, within the last year, we worked with Pilar to move the annual festival, mm-hmm, that El Centro has to one of our main streets, bringing more of the community into it and spotlighting this community. One of the two points I want to bring up that I think we need to really work on. Number one is Eric spoke of economic development. I think we could better let our community members know about the availability of grants and small business loans from the county, from Orange County. I'm not sure that that really has gotten out to the community, and especially even in Carrboro, mm-hmm. especially in a way that I think it could, the availability of loans and grants for entrepreneurs that might need that. So I think that's one area we could partner better than we have. Another is we have learned in recent months that our communication network could be improved a bit. We were tested with the water crisis. And, you know, while we put out the news to a lot of the local folks and we tried to text, we tried to email, and we tried to go by word of mouth, you know, we have found out that, you know, there are ways that we could better get the word out to different pockets of community in the towns. So I think those are two ways in particular going forward, I think, that we could achieve some success.
And Chief Blue, kind of piggybacking on that, I mean, a lot of that effort is that relationship building that you've been talking about. So from a law enforcement perspective, also as a longtime Chapel Hillian here, what goes through your mind making those efforts?
Well, I think we just need to continue to see ourselves as one community to the extent we can. And I actually think we do pretty well in that regard, but we've got a long way to go. I have a specific ask that any groups out there that are interested in including our Orange County law enforcement folks in meetings and outreach events and social opportunities, invite us. And even in settings where you might think, why in the world would we have a cop come to this? believe it or not, we're pretty good company, and we are interested in refocusing on relationship building. It's more important than ever, and I think this last hour illustrates just why that's the case. And I'm proud to say that law enforcement agencies in our county are really, really committed. So I would say include us, invite us, we'll get there. And that relationship building is so important. I also just want to mention coming up soon, I already mentioned Chapel Hill Islamic Society's mosque opening very soon. And I don't think they have a date yet, but I know they are very, very close. And that's something that's been a long time coming. They're very excited, and we look forward to celebrating with them when they have their grand opening. So look for local promotion of that soon. And our next Faith ID event is next Saturday the 6th at the Carrboro Century Center, 8:30 to 11, I think that's right. And those are just invaluable settings for us to spend time with a couple hundred people every single time and really dispel this notion that there's an us versus them, and instead remind everybody that it's all of us.
I'll hop across the table to Eric here, and kind of that same mindset of moving forward. What do you think would be the most impactful thing that we could do now?
Well, I'll start by saying that it's really a privilege to be here in this forum, and to be able to talk. And with privilege comes responsibility. And I take that very seriously. And I want to, you know, extend that out to the listeners as well. Kindness goes a long way. Listening goes a long way. The privilege that we have of being in this community, I encourage people to contribute to your local artists and contribute to self-expression, contribute to those who are organizing the community. And that is a way of being able to be proactive within this community and creating a safer community for all of us. So aside from all of the programs that we have, I really want to sort of make an ask of the listeners to be proactive and to not just listen, but to take action in kindness.
Sajal, we'll wrap it up with you.
Sure.
Yeah, I echo a lot of what's been said. There's definitely no perfect way to address all these issues, but you know, and so the more the better is kind of my emphasis. Again, like I said before, you know, I feel like we're dealing with a lot of rooted issues here, the issues of Islamophobia, you know, racism, and things that the society has been intensifying under this administration for sure. One thing, you know, we kind of have had in our calls to action previously is really, again, articulating what resistance looks like for faith leaders, for elected officials, for law enforcement and public safety. and for universities, and to really start to think about what that means, and really start to question this phrase and the feeling that there is an extent to our power, and to articulate that phrase resistance, and don't let it just become a popular thing. I think some of our people really feel like they need that, and I also understand some of the difficulties around that. But we're looking for some boldness. In terms of some stuff that we see as being really important is that through a collaborative effort of Churchwold Service and Durham congregations, associations, and neighborhoods, we are working with the county, Durham County, on a task force for immigration where we're going to be able to shape and be part of a discussion around how around really real questions around the extent of the federal agents in our communities. Which we're very excited of, and we encourage more task force to pop up within that have representation from elected officials from the city and county across the state around these certain issues. Also, their World Refugee Day is a holiday that's celebrated for a lot of folks that I work with in refugee camps around the world, and we're happy to say that Durham County, as part of Durham City, as part of its resolution against the Muslim ban and refugee ban, have started a annual Durham Refugee Day, which we'll be celebrating. And I'm in the process of planning with the city, Churchwold Service, and World Relief right now, which is going to be Saturday, May 6th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. in Durham Central Park. We're going to have bands, food vendors, representative of our communities, and relevant workshops from groups and organizations that represent not only refugees, but like I said before, the broader definition of refugees that includes all types of migrants who identify with that experience. And then, as we all know, as a community organizer, I can't leave without saying that May 1st is International Workers' Day, and there are actions taking place, I'm sure, all across the Triangle. But it's a good reminder about May 1st that it really cuts at the heart of a lot of the issues that face all people in the society. And we want to always lift up the people's right to form meaningful coalitions, the right for power, the right for workers to have fair wages and benefits, and the availability of affordable housing in our growing and developing communities. These are issues that if we were able to take a decisive stance on, would not only just impact immigrants and refugees, but all sectors of our society that deserve it.
May 6th sounds like it's going to be a big day. Then we've got the Faith ID event in the morning. Then you can swing over to Durham for World Refugee Day. Thank you all so much for contributing to the conversation today here on WCHL. Again, a little bit of a new format for the community forum, but we do hope you'll join us next month in May as well as we continue tackling issues that are important to our community here on WCHL 97.9 FM 1368.
This month's WCHL Community Forum was presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Its mission is to support opportunities to put Chapel Hill's people to work and create economic prosperity for all, now and in the future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. $500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. So go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box and get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit opentoo.biz.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a four-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.